Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
You go in your room and you do this and you've lost your screens.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
Give me your phone.
With Margaret Aples
and Amy Wilson.
Do not write checks with your mouth that you are not going to cash.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to. What works, Amy? Hello, everyone, and welcome to the What Fresh Hell Laughing in the Face of Motherhood podcast. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy, and this week we're talking about punishing kids. What does and doesn't work?
What works, Amy? Locking them in the yard? Just screaming at the top of your lungs, I can't stand it anymore work? I've been doing all of that this week.
I've done some good research in this one. There's some good studies, and there's definitely a lot of like, here's what you can't do. And I think we'll go through that, and then we'll talk about like what actually works. How's that sound?
Good. I have a lot of thoughts on this. So I think we should just dive in. There's a lot to say.
You know, as I was looking online about the different research and advice that's out there, so much of the advice about punishment and discipline is from the sort of spare the rod, spoil the child crowd, I'll call them. And that's not where we're coming from, I think. But then there's a whole other, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like things were better.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
You could pull a switch off a tree and take care of your problems. Let's talk about the things that are off the table, right? Corporal punishment, we're not going to discuss that, for at least for you and I and every psychologist and study out there. Corporal punishment is a bad idea and remarkably ineffective if the goal is to create a happy and moral child.
And we may have people who are listening who grew up in a spanking switch kind of a culture, and that may still be what you're doing, but there's not a lot to back up that is an effective form of discipline.
The other thing that I think kind of needs to stop, and I will screed about this, is I think the sort of performative social media punishments that have become a thing, like need to go away.
Not a fan. The whole like, look at me, I'm making my kid walk to school with an I'm a bully shirt on.
Yes.
In the cold.
Yes. And then I'm going to shame her on social media and get 13 million views and get myself on the Today Show about it. Like, I think that is... You are not creating a very good relationship with your child going forward. You teach them how to bully.
We are against corporal punishment, but understand that there is a cultural and social background which may be hard to cut off immediately. But we are 100% against the I'm a bully and walking in the snow pictures on social media.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no other side for that.
As I was researching this, I was seeing lists that were like 10 hilariously creative ways to punish your kids. And I'm like, okay, that is not the bar. That is not what we're doing in this episode. We're not going to be hilariously creative.
That may land you on morning television. Like, no, that's not the calculation here.
And I can't say I haven't ever enjoyed those. Remember the one that was like, there was like a fighting shirt. It was like a giant men's.
Okay, that one's funny though.
Hands under shirt. Okay, that one was funny.
That one I don't really have a big problem with. I just don't like the marching in the snow with like a, I mean, that's your in your house and it's kind of a goof. I mean, again, whatever. I didn't actually do it, but the like walking around with an I'm a bully, it just doesn't seem like it's really addressing the problem.
I don't think shaming. Yeah. So one is like getting your social media likes up by doing it is a bad idea. I think shaming your kids in general is a very ineffective punishment technique. I mean, anyway, it's going to lead to more problems than you're trying to solve when you do that. And the other thing that I think we need to take off the table, because experts sort of say like, no, that's a bad idea. Again, going to cause more problems, is like the silent treatment. Like love withdrawal as a punishment method.
Really?
Like, I'm not
kind of a fan of love withdrawal.
I'm not going to look at you or talk to you or literal love withdrawal. So there was a study done by Dr. Martin Hoffman that kids who are exposed to love withdrawal as a punishment technique, you know, tended to have less developed morality, worse emotional health, and do more bad stuff.
Wait a minute. Is a timeout considered a love withdrawal technique?
No.
Okay. So I'm hearing the wrong thing because I'm like, wait. Because the advice I often give people, I had a friend recently who has a kid who's biting, like an 18-month-old. And she said, well, what do you do? Like with a kid who's biting, like the kid doesn't talk. You can't rationalize with them. They're kind of just, it's some sort of like sensory seeking thing. They're not really doing it to be, you know, they're not biting to be like, I want to hurt you. They're just kind of biting because they don't really get it. A lot of kids are biters. And my advice was like, to me, biting shuts off the mommy machine. You say no. And then like whatever play and fun is going on shuts off. And like you blank face it. Because you don't, like, when you're like, no, biting, it's like you're kind of, you're feeding something. They're getting negative attention. You just go to zero attention. Like, the mom machine shuts down.
That's different.
But is that considered, that's not considered love withdrawal.
That's not love, like, love withdrawal is, I'm not going to speak to my teenager for a week or look at him because I'm so mad about what he did.
Oh, okay, that's bonkers.
Like,
all right.
like emotional games. Yeah, yeah. All right, so we're pretty much in agreement on what the, don't do these things. But then what's left?
I know you have a lot of research, but I would like to start with my top of the mountain punishment advice. Is that okay?
Yes.
This is the advice that I feel like is my touchstone. Connected consequences. As often as possible, your behavior causes you to lose the thing you were misbehaving with or about.
This is the goal. I mean, the whole idea of letting the punishment fit the crime, right? Which is like the saying, which people have been talking about that for years. That's actually a Gilbert and Sullivan lyric, let the punishment fit the crime.
Would you like to sing a little for us, Amy?
I shall in something time let the punishment fit the crime. It's from the Mikado. That's where it came from. I thought it was
going to
be.
Guys, you didn't know you were getting a Mikado reference. I didn't know either. Did you when you turned on this podcast?
I thought it was going to be like St. Augustine, but no, it was Gilbert and Sullivan came up with that phrase. And I do think that, yeah, we do. When you can do that, that's great. And we can definitely talk about the ways that works. But there are lots of times when that's not applicable, or trying to find the way that the punishment fits the crime. There isn't always a fit. I'm not sure that the goal is that needs to be the primary goal.
I just think I know, as having been a kid and having kids now, that punishment randomness and lack of consistency is frustrating. And I was like a high sense of justice child, and I have a high sense of justice child. And so it's like, okay, if you know you're allowed to use my computer to look at X and you use my computer to look at Y, you do not get to use my computer for a week. Like, you need to be responsible in using your things. You left your bike at the park, you lost it. You now don't have a bike until you can raise enough money to get a new bike. Like, anytime you can connect the consequences to the crime, it feels very organic, and it doesn't feel like the thing of like, you rolled your eyes at me 2 weeks with no phone. It's like, wait, what? Like, it doesn't have anything to do with each other. And the kid just ends up feeling like, my life is a random series. Kids have so little control that like you give them that feeling of like, my life is just a random series of events that I have no control over and I'm constantly in trouble. And my kids are just getting to that age where they're like, I'm always in trouble. I'm like, you're not always in trouble. When you do X, you get Y.
But when when there's a clear connection and you can make it, great. But the goal is, I think, to always have the kid understand why what's happened has happened. If there's a punishment that doesn't fit the crime, you need to make sure the kid understands, like, I did something wrong and here's why. And as you say, not make it about like, poor me, like 2 weeks without my phone. You can't believe how awful my mom is. And now we've completely forgotten what the problem was. The problem was what the kid did, not it's so unfair to live in this house with my terrible mother. It is about keeping the focus on the action that caused the punishment. So I think, the easy answer is let the punishment fit the crime. But I think that's possible like 20% of the time. And so what do you do the rest of the time to Like, you hit your brother? No, I'm going to hit you. Well, that's a punishment that fits the crime, but it's a terrible idea.
That's exactly right. That's what I do. You hit your brother. I'm going to punch you. No, that doesn't work.
So that's an example of like, okay, so in that case, what do we do to make it edifying? Like, does punishing a kid always, ideally it has to have a sort of, well, I've learned a lesson. Like that's ideally a part of it. Is it a failed punishment if it doesn't have that?
I don't know if it's that they have to learn a lesson, but it is the overall lesson of life that my behavior constantly affects my personal outcome. And so that's what you want punishment to do. Like, oh, I snuck down, using an example from today. I woke up at 6 a.m., snuck down, went into the cookie cabinet and ate 7 cookies and then didn't want any breakfast. I now don't get dessert for the next 3 nights. So I would rather have dessert than sneak down at 7 o'clock in the morning and eat a bunch of cookies. So I have put together why I want to make different choices, you know, and maybe these examples seem very easy and one-to-one, but you really want it to be like, I love playing video games with my brother. But when my brother frustrates me during a video game, I also really like to punch him in the face. But if I punch him in the face, I am banned for video games for the rest of the day. I don't want that consequence. So when I'm frustrated with my brother, I have to find a way around that so I don't lose the thing I want. Like, that's your entire life. And that's the formula you're trying to set up.
It's accountability.
And when you lose it and you get, yeah, there's a continuity. There's just a, oh, 2 choices. I'm going to try to make the better one because it's in my own self-interest. And it's hard. Like, there are definitely times where I'm driving down the highway and I'm like, if one more person says one more word, I'm going to turn this car around. Like, whatever. Like, everybody gets into that mode where you're just like, I'm screaming crazy things. My sister tells a story once where she saw a mom with a bunch of young kids at the park and she screamed at them, that's it. We're never going outside again. We're like, we've all been there. Like, that's not a normal punishment for misbehaving at the park. But it's just something to orient yourself for. And it's also something that you can very much set up with. Like, another thing we talk a lot about is expectations. Like, what are my expectations around letting you ride your bike to the park with your friends? Okay, if anyone, I live in a rural small town, if I hear anybody say that they saw you guys misbehaving, being rude to other people, you're done with this activity. This is an activity you like, but it comes with an expectation.
Okay, so the goal for a child is to have accountability. And true accountability comes when they take responsibility for what they did and make it better, but then they also don't do it again, whether or not you're there.
Exactly.
There's a part to what you were saying about like, I want to hit my brother, but I'm not going to because all those video games, maybe eventually get them to, I shouldn't hit my brother because I shouldn't hit my brother, but it's enough as a first step to be, because then I will lose something I want. So it doesn't matter if my mom is looking or not, I'm not going to do that. So you want to create the accountability.
And also you've developed the muscle of, I want to do something, but I will not do it. I will control myself because I don't want to face the consequences.
So that's what the goal is. And Dr. Laura Markham, who's a child psychologist, she says that if the goal is accountability, that punishments might not work at all. And I want to talk about why she says that right after this. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into. into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own. And today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
Okay, so Dr. Laura Markham, she suggests that punishments might not work at all because I thought these were interesting points, and I don't necessarily agree, but they do help me focus on, so what is a good punishment? She says, as you brought up before, that a punishment can focus a child on feeling sorry for themselves, that they've lost their phone for 2 weeks instead of correct what they did. You tell your kid they're a bad person. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, I don't tell my kids they're bad people, but I guess she's
no, but I do have kids who will be like, I'm like, you have to stop screaming. I've asked you 10 times. Your brother's trying to do his homework. And my kid will be like, you think I'm a bad kid? It's so frustrating. And I'm like, I don't think you're a bad kid. Stop it.
Right. But they're succeeding in changing the subject. You think I'm a bad kid? Like, stop yelling at your brother. Like, it's frustrating, the punishment is an opportunity for them to change the subject. A punished kid, she suggests, learns not to get caught doing the thing, sometimes more than not to do the thing.
I am so about to give this lady a tweet, but okay, keep going.
She's not saying punishing is bad because it's because your child is a soft place to fall. She's right that punishing a kid for, you know, smoking after school or juuling, I guess I should say, after school is just going to teach them, like, don't do it where the teacher saw you. And it also puts the onus on the parent, like, to make the choices for the kid. Like, we want to move the kid towards accountability for their actions. And they can't do that when they're 2, but they can do that when they're 16. And so,
for sure.
So you're moving towards, it really stuck with me, her idea that, like, accountability means they're not going to do the thing because they've learned that they shouldn't do the thing. Not, I'm not going to do the thing because if mom sees
well,
me,
all right, that's a very good, I retract my tweet. That's a very good point. And I think, and I've talked about before, like, the hearth tender idea that, like, you are the tender of the hearth, but the consequence of, like, being at the nice warm hearth that everybody wants to be at is behaving according to the society of the family. And so I think that whole thing is like, that's something that's every day. That's not about punishing. That's not about, like, you can do whatever you want and then you catch your kid with cigarettes or Juul and you're like, no phone for 3 weeks. Like, that's not going to have any relationship to it. You want to be like, the society of my family does not value smoking. And so I don't want to give up all that I like about being a happy member of my family by smoking. You know, it's a much deeper calculus.
Yeah, and a lot more complicated, right? I mean, it's
then like, I really want to smoke, but I don't want to lose my phone for 2 weeks.
It's a longer game. Let's go back to younger kids. The best practices, this is what you were saying. I'm going to go to a, you know, a parenting expert here, but you just said the same thing. Jasmine Morad.
I am a parenting expert.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm very good at this.
She says, like, for little kids, the punishment, I mean, ideally for everybody, but especially for little kids, the punishment has to be logical and immediate.
Yep.
It has to be connected to what they did wrong because they don't have abstract thinking. So you can take, if your 16-year-old punches his brother, you can take his phone for the night and he understands the connection. His abstract reasoning has evolved enough that he understands that that's the punishment. A 3-year-old's not really going to get that. And it also has to be immediate. This reminds me of, like, the dog training stuff I always go back to. If Marshmallow does something wrong, And, you know, if she poops on the carpet and I find it 2 hours later, she's like, "What? Why are you yelling at me?" And she doesn't get it. And I think that we, you know, little kids are kind of the same way. It has to be close together.
And it has to be, and I'm telling tales on myself right now. This is the quicksand of my like young kid parenting life. Do not threaten things you are not going to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Do not write checks with your mouth that you are not going to cash. If you say, if you hit your brother one more time, you are leaving the movies. You have got to be prepared to pull three kids out of the movie theater. Like, you don't have a lot of rope with that. Like, the more times you say, and that's the thing, I've said it and then I try really hard to do it, but sometimes I've said things that I don't mean. Like, we're having a really good time at like a street fair or something, and I'm like, if you two touch each other one more time, we're leaving here. And then I'm like, oh,
why did I say that? Right?
I don't want to leave. It's not that big a deal that they're touching each other. But now that I've said it, you don't have that many times to be like, if you don't do this, we're leaving. If you don't do it, they get that really fast. You're not a person of your word, you know? And so they just start ignoring those threats. And we've talked about this with your dog, that it's like, if you say, "Marshmallow, sit, 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 sit." And then she finally sits down. She learns that my owner has to say sit 7 times and then I have to sit.
I totally agree. I have been the mom. I had my two kids on an uptown city bus in New York City once, and my younger guy was, you know, screaming and carrying on about something. And I'm like, if you don't stop it, we are getting off this bus at the next stop because nobody around here wants to hear. And I was really performing this for the other people on the bus who didn't want to hear my kids scream. And they were all giving me a hard time. So I'm like, look what a good parent I am. You will get off the bus if you don't stop. And he was like 2. So he was like, what? Like, didn't believe me. We got off the bus and I had to drag him home through the rain. And now he's really crying and but I did it because I said I was going to do it and I did it. And even if people weren't watching me, I still, yes, am an extreme believer in following through on what you say. You have to. I know lots of people who don't, but yeah, it doesn't work. If you're trying to use the threat as a deterrent, which it can be, right? Like if I see you hit your sister with that lightsaber one more time, it's going to have to go on the high shelf for a week because I don't like how you're doing that. That can work very well.
It is effective, but you have to follow through. Think you do have to have some zero tolerance stuff in the house. Like, we have a zero tolerance on hitting. So like, anytime you hit, you're out. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care if you're if you're doing your homework, you're out and you can do your homework later. And when the other kids are on screens, you'll be doing homework. Zero tolerance policy. Like, nobody touches each other in the house. And then we have, and always have always had, a zero tolerance for tantrums in the main areas of the house.
No tantrums in main areas.
No, like, if you're going to carry on and fuss, you have to go somewhere where we can't hear you because we don't want to deal with it.
When my three were little, 5, 3, and 1, we established some house rules like this. Like, I'm tired about punishing. Like, these are just like, I'm not going to say this again. We don't hit each other, right? So I let them come up with what the rules should be. And then my 5-year-old, wrote them, and my 3-year-old made the pictures, and we hung them up in our kitchen where they stayed for years. And one of them was no drilling your sister, with a picture of like a baby and then another person holding a drill and drilling their sister. It never happened, but it was because it was a rule. No drilling your sister.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. That's a solid rule. The other way we approach this sometimes is I have a 10-year-old who is getting kind of tweeny, and he we call it ugging me. I say to my kids 3 times a day, don't ug me. It's time for dinner. Ugh. And I'm like, I don't want to hear ug as a response to anything I say again. And sometimes with those, I give them 10 boxes on the whiteboard. It's all about the whiteboard, guys. And I will say, because I don't want to get into the thing, I don't think it's realistic for like a 10 going on 14-year-old to never have a rude response and never roll his eyes. Like, he's figuring stuff out and expressing himself. But if it starts to get bad, I'm like, we're going to account 5. If I have to tell you this 5 times tonight, you are done for the night and you'll have to go to bed. And then he's like, fine, mom. And I'm like, that's 1. We don't get into don't you dare. We do sometimes, of course, because I lose my temper and I'm like, don't you ever speak to me that way again. But I just try to keep it neutral and calm. Like, that's 1. And then he's like, this is dumb. That's 2. Like, and it's just your choice. Like, can you get it together or not? And if you don't, you're going to bed. And sometimes pulling him out of the equation at 6:45 and sending him to bed results in a lot of anger and temper tantruming. And then it's like, that has to happen in your room. I'm sorry you're upset, but you may not speak to me that way. Hopefully we'll have a better day tomorrow.
I do the counting thing too. There's a book called 1-2-3 Magic. I haven't read it in years, but I read it when my kids were little, and it is this like, stay calm. You count them. I'm going to count to three and then I'm going to turn the television off. Why would you? That's one, that's two. And it works. It works so well. And it really cuts down on the yelling, but you have to be 100% consistent on following through with the calmly presented consequence.
I think there's room to be reasonable in that stuff. Like, now that my kids are into like certain types of video games that are like longer, or they're watching something on TV, you know, I do think there's room to think. I heard someone a long time ago talking about like, okay, your kid like spills their milk at the table and it's like, that's it. No more milk for you. And, you know, can you think to yourself, like, what if I spilled my milk? Like, I've made a gesture and knocked my beer over at dinner. And it's not like my husband's like, that's it. No more beer for you. Like, you can kind of try to think about it and have a heart about it and say, okay, like, some things are mistakes. And now that my kids are on those kind of like games and shows and stuff, I'll try to say, okay, guys, we have to wrap up screens. You have 45 minutes of screens in the afternoon, and you know that's the limit. So try to plan around that. But if at 45 minutes I go down and they're like, oh, I'm right in the middle of something, I'll say, how much longer do you need? And if they say 12 minutes, I say, no, that's too long. I'm sorry. Can you wrap up in five? And I try to not just be like the automaton of like, respect my authority and the rules are the rules. Like, of course the rules are the rules. And if you're roughhousing and being a jerk and I've told you 10 times to stop and then you spill your milk, no more milk. But if you just are talking, you make a gesture and you knock it over, like, okay, that could happen to anybody. Like, you got to try to keep your heart involved in it.
I think the most important thing with little kids is the circling back at the end. Right? They went to their room, they sobbed because they hit their sister, and now they're feeling very sorry for themselves that they got sent to their room or whatever. Is the circling back, not in the moment, not when they're in red brain, but when everybody's calmed down, like, do you understand why you were sent to your room? Do you understand why we don't hit each other in this house? Like, do you understand, in a calm, non-yelling way? Just make sure the point is driven home, because that's the point. You don't want them hitting each other, and it can often get missed, I think, for little kids.
And even for older kids, I think that this still carries on a little bit, in that sometimes I will go up at bedtime and say to my 10-year-old, hey, that was a rough day. It just seemed like you were frustrated with me all day. It was making me frustrated with you. I was yelling. You were talking rudely. I just don't like it when we're like that. So I guess we just had a rough day with it today. Tomorrow, let's just try to reset and not try to do that again. And I think it's helpful. And it is, I mean, tweet. Like, I don't see me and my kids as equals. I'm the authority figure and they like must bend to my will fundamentally. But I think it's okay as kids get older to sort of start opening that dialogue of like, that didn't feel very good. How can we stop that from happening again? We did that with the screens. I was like, guys, I want you to enjoy your screens, but I cannot have a 15-minute fight every single time we watch screens about turning them off. How can we do it?
Because the goal is a harmonious home, and the goal is getting the TV turned off. The goal isn't respect my authority. That you would rather do this without punishing them and yelling. So get to that stuff.
If you see your parent as just like random authority machine that just spits out random punishments, it's not going to be a harmonious relationship that makes you want to behave differently. It just makes you want to be like, I can't wait to get out of here.
I think this leads us into effective punishments for older kids. So let's take a break and then we'll have some more talk about that when we get back.
More and more you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, got to be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
What does it mean when you get punished?
Like, something bad happens to you.
And why do you get punished?
You do, like, something bad. Like, if you shoot someone, you get punished.
Okay, but what is a reason that a kid would get punished?
If they, like, break a really expensive lamp.
Why do parents punish their kids?
So the kids know that they're not supposed to do the thing that they got punished for.
What is the worst punishment that can happen to a middle schooler?
You get detention.
What is detention?
Detention is where you talk with the principal.
That sounds really, really bad and scary.
It's not scary, but it is bad.
Do you ever do anything wrong?
Sometimes, of course, everybody does something wrong except saints.
Are punishments fair?
Well, I think punishments are fair if the punishment fits the crime.
You're jamming me with that. I have to be clever on top of everything else?
Like, what are some things that kids do to get them in trouble?
Watching Family Guy.
Why is it not allowed to watch Family Guy?
Because it's not appropriate.
What about at school? How do you get punished at school?
Principal's office.
Is that bad?
Very bad. Your parents would not like that at all.
What is the worst punishment that can happen to a first grader?
They get sent to the principal's office.
What happens? I've heard about this principal's office. It sounds very scary.
Because then, like, the principal gets mad at you and the principal runs the school. So
that's, like, even worse than just getting in trouble with your teacher. You go to the big lady at the top and she gets mad.
Yep.
Your big problem, you only have really one big behavior problem, which is what do you do at night when you're supposed to be sleeping?
I stay up late.
And your punishment is that you have to wake up for school even though you're really, really tired.
Oh, I get it.
Okay, so my question about punishing older kids, of which I have, I guess, three. I have at least two at this point. I have a tween and two teens. Is that, like, the phone becomes the currency? Like, give me your phone. Give me your phone. That's sort of what I go to these days. And is that okay that that's basically the only punishment I give them?
Can you think of a specific example?
Sure. Right. Like, I don't like how you're talking to me. You just lost your phone. like that. Like, that's what you use, and it's currency, and it's effective, and it's not directly connected. But they're abstract thinkers, so who cares? But is it, Dr. Carl Pickard calls it the game of takeaway, like deprivation. That's the sort of easiest way to discipline an adolescent. But it's passive, he argues, like it's a passive thing. It doesn't require anything of them or you, really. And so it's like, it's effective, but could be more effective.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely feels like you just get into like, it's like we call it like the great junk exchange at Christmas, where everyone's just like, here's your cheesecake gift card, here's your ice cream gift card. Like, it starts to feel a little bit like the phone is just traveling back and forth randomly almost, you know?
Well, it's not random because, I mean, once they're teenagers, their social lives more and more live on that phone. Like, they're not just playing games. That is how they're going to ask their friends about homework, find out who said what to who. It's all happening on the phone now. It's not happening, you know, in real life. And so it's an extremely hot thing for them. So it isn't useless. It's definitely effective, but it's not letting the punishment fit the crime necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I don't have kids. I mean, my kids are still pretty responsive to the fundamentals. Like, almost, I mean, I still will give my 10-year-old a timeout. Like, it's like, they're still really pretty responsive to like the very basic things of like, if you do this, you won't be able to continue doing the thing you like doing. Teenagers, it's a mysterious world, but I don't mean it's random, but you know what I mean? It's just like a constant back and forth of like, bad phone. It's like, is there another way to get underneath it that seems a little more effective?
Well, here's what he says. So
I don't know.
So Dr. Pickard, he talks about depriving versus other ways of punishing adolescents. So he's like, if you're going to deprive adolescents, which I think is the go-to for most of us, don't take away everything because then they have nothing to lose. Like that's an obvious one, but don't take away their phone and their ability to walk home after school with their friend and like, don't, you know, don't give yourself something else to work with.
Well, that's smart. That's right.
Always leave something on the table. Right. And going back to what we were saying before, you don't scream out in frustration, no TV ever for the rest of your life, unless you mean right. It. Don't take away, he says, don't take away pillars of self-esteem. This goes back, I think, to not shaming the kid. Like, don't take away the basketball team. I mean, unless they like hold up a convenience store or something, right? Like, don't,
right. Don't. But at that point, you might need more help.
Then maybe there's some other podcasts, but yeah, like, don't take away the pillar of self-esteem. Don't shame them. He says, don't restrict all social contact with friends, like reduce the flow, but don't turn it off. He argues, and I guess he's right, that in this day and age for kids of this age, like the social currency is so important. It moves so quickly. Being interconnected is so crucial to who they are that, you know, don't take it away for 2 weeks if it really needs to be for a night. Like, don't, because there's costs to that. Like, they're going to have to climb their way out of that, and you're causing other problems. So don't in anger, you know, say something you don't really mean about like, you don't have a phone anymore or something like that, because that's a big punishment, he's arguing, and you're making other problems.
I think it's really true. And we talked about this on another episode, the idea of like building all this in from the time they're little, like the idea of letting go and not helicoptering, that like some people think, oh, when they're 18 and they go to college, then I'll let go. But if you haven't been practicing that skill and kind of fixing it and tooling with it since they were 3 or 4, like, okay, now I'll let you go to the snack bar at the pool by yourself. Now I'll let you walk to school by yourself. And like practicing letting them be very independent. At 18, you're not going to suddenly start doing that. You're going to be going to college and doing their laundry for them. Like, you're not going to let go of it all at the same time. And I think discipline and punishment, and again, I don't have teenagers, but I think the building blocks that you build all along, which is like, listen, I'm not just a random automaton of like discipline that is just spitting, you know, discipline out in random directions. And every situation has expectations. And if you don't meet those expectations, it's going to go badly for you. I'm not then saying that like bluebirds will land on you every day and everyone will be happy and get along and there'll never be any conflict. But I would suggest that if you are having really bad problems with this, with a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, that you are starting to feel like your authority stuff is not working and you're having trouble keeping them under control and you guys are constantly butting heads and like they're spiraling and you're not sure how to meet that with the correct form of discipline, go get some help with it when they're young.
Yeah.
Because you're going to start doing this when they're 15 years old and 6 inches taller than you.
And you can't be there. Like when they go out in the world, you're not going to be there to say, hey, you weren't supposed to do that. They're going to pay the price for their misdeeds and their unkind words tossed off. And like, they're going to own that stuff. And so when they're older adolescents, I think it is about sort of putting the onus on them for reparation, right? That deprivation, okay, I'll take your phone, but then reparation, like to make things right when there's another person or thing that was harmed or wronged by your action, you have to make it right. And I'll help you brainstorm ways to do that. Like, can I give you an example? My eighth grader, he was goofing around with some other eighth graders. He goes to a grade school that starts like at nursery. And a bunch of eighth grade kids were, you know, unattended for a few minutes in a room with some like athletic equipment. And were being very silly. And I don't even understand fully exactly what happened, but there was a sort of like blow up, you know, clown, like one of those punching bag kind of things. You know, the clown, you like, you punch it and it bops, it falls over and then it stands back up. I would say that's an Oldilocks alert, but there was one in my kid's school. So the kids were playing
it's
with
still
it.
Still an Oldilocks alert.
Back in my day.
I have more questions than answers, but let's just keep moving.
Well, it's because it's a school that's for like 3-year-olds and 13-year-olds, right? So I don't know why this is there either and why the eighth graders are with it. But somehow a bunch of roughhousing boys like were goofing around with this thing and they put a hole in it. And
shocker.
Yeah, shocker. And, you know, the PE teacher was like, look, they need to learn respect. She was, you know, pretty upset about it because I guess it's not the first time something like this has happened, that they need to respect that the stuff is for the younger kids. It's not for them. So my kid has to contribute towards buying a new one out of his own money. Fine. But she also said, I'm going to take away recess for a couple of days and he's going to come help with the lower school gym classes during that like precious, precious 15 minutes of recess. And he's done that for a few days. And, you know, I was behind that because he's making reparation and hopefully engaging in some way with like, okay, so these are the little kids that I need to be thinking about and the stuff's for them. And I guess it was kind of thoughtless that we like ruined their thing. And that's proper, I guess, punishment for an adolescent.
I think that makes sense, but it makes me think of another thing about taking away recess and stuff that I've been dealing with like some of my kids and like misbehavior. One other thing I would say about the punishment thing is like, without getting too tweet precious, like, oh, my angel did something wrong for a reason. That's an example of like, okay, the boys are roughhousing and, you know, whatever, they made a mistake. I sometimes have the thing where I will come home and I'll spend an hour like yelling at the kids and like, you go in your room and you did this and you've lost your screens. And then I'm like, everyone's hungry. Try to remember before you go, like if you find yourself in like full-time punishment mode, like what is causing that behavior?
Yeah, it's the iceberg.
There may be something there.
Yeah.
I mean, you might say in that case, like, you know, like it might be part of this school to be like, maybe the eighth grader shouldn't be unsupervised here if this has happened several times.
Right.
But whatever. Like there might be solutions, but especially for younger kids, I think sometimes I'm like, oh my God, my children have become like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde and like had full personality transplants. And I think, oh no, wait. They didn't sleep well last night. Today's just going to be a mess. Let's just try to get through it. And I'm not like as disciplinary. Or, oh, wait, they haven't had a snack in 3 hours. Let me feed them and let me see if I can turn this thing around.
Yeah, because you're right. Because the goal isn't I will discipline and you will. The goal is not hitting the sister. Like the goal is peace in the home. So if you can get to that without punishments and discipline, good for you. And sometimes you need them. And
the goal is peace in the home. And the other big goal, I think, is training your children to be able to self-regulate. And I have one kid who self-regulates, like every day is just self-regulation. Like, oh, I'll do this and that. Never a minute's trouble. I have a kid who is extremely dysregulated and has a lot of trouble with this. And like, if somebody bumps into him, he'll be like, that was a personal affront there after me. You know, he just sees the world in a difficult way, which is, it's hard for him. And he's got a very low frustration point. And I really stay pretty hard on top of him because if he cannot learn to self-regulate and make better choices and defer gratification and not punch people he's mad at, his life is going to be much more difficult. He's got to figure it out.
Yeah. You're right.
And the way I'm doing that is by like really trying to make the punishment fit the crime, but like keeping those parameters pretty tight on him.
Because the goal is accountability, right? The goal is for him to realize, oh, I don't want to do this because I want to keep my friends and I want to be nice to be around. Right. And
the goal is like functional adulthood. Like if the cashier bothers me, I don't reach over and punch his face. Like, I mean, life is full of annoying people and difficult situations. And life is also full of things you don't want to do and have to do anyway. And so it is kind of your job to like set those parameters from the biting toddler, which is like, we can have a lot of fun, but biting ends all the fun, to the like kids on screens and like, okay, you love playing screens, but there are rules around them. And if you can keep them, you can keep having fun. And if you can't, you're not going to be able to have this fun. To teenagers where it's like, hey, at our house, smoking is completely not allowed. And so if you choose to smoke, your home life is going to get much more uncomfortable. Do you really want to make that trade-off? Like, these things just replicate at every age and stage.
Yeah, they do. And so we want to move them towards accountable adulthood. And I guess that's going to happen like a very little bit at a time.
Yeah. And I definitely understand that, like, easier said than done. Like, stop by my house sometime at 6:30 at night and like hear me screaming at my kids like, we will never breathe air again if you don't stop hitting. Like, I do all the bad things, but I feel like I've come to a pretty strong understanding of like what the goals are and what works and what doesn't.
Can I give one more takeaway on this that I thought was a good one?
Please do.
Once the punishment is over, once the kid has served the sentence, let it go.
So important.
Let it go. So this is a quote from Dr. Picard. He says, a parent who holds on to past violations, who will not let them go, what one teenager called keeping books against me, it builds up a history of complaints that no young person can ever overcome. And again, you're creating another problem when you do that. So they did the sentence. They are set free now to go ahead and sin no more. Go out into the world. Expect the best from them instead of reminding them all the times they screwed up.
I'm also going to briefly take the flip side of that, which is I have an anxious kid who sometimes when he gets in trouble, it gets him very, very upset. And so we have developed a phrase in our house, let's put a check by that. And so sometimes he'll come back, you know, especially if we've ever had a thing where like every once in a while, like whatever, they're fooling around in the house in a way. And, you know, it happens that like I'll be like, cut that out. And they'll turn because they're like spinning around and hit me in the face or something. And like that kind of stuff. Like he gets so upset by that. Like, oh, I did something wrong and I hurt someone. And I will say like, okay, now you have to go to your room. But he'll occasionally like 3 or 4 days later come back and be like, I feel so upset about that thing where I hit you in the face. Or even I feel so upset by that thing where I watched the thing I wasn't supposed to watch or whatever it is. He takes it hard.
Wow.
And I'll often say, let's put a check by that. I have forgiven you for that, and that is over. So from your side, it's also okay. Because he just is anxious. And when he gets in trouble, he holds on to the anxiousness of like, it upsets him a lot to get in trouble. And so kind of from both ends, it's like, okay, we've apologized. We've served our punishment. And now you are rehabilitated and I'm moving you out into the world. You're not on parole. Like, it's over.
You're closing the circle, which for that kid, that's a kid that doesn't need to hear. So now do you understand why I told you once about some kids right. Need that. Like, so you do remember why this had to happen.
And
right?
He needs it on some things. Like sometimes he's like, you're always so unfair that you make us turn us up the TV. So I have to be like, no, here's the rule. And we do it. But sometimes when he gets in a certain type of trouble that he worries that like he did a bad thing, he needs to hear from the other side. Like, that is fine. You have understood why you did it wrong. And now we don't need to talk about it anymore. You're not in trouble about that anymore. Both of my kids do that.
I think we solved it.
We definitely solved this one. I mean, sometimes we're like, that was hard to solve. Guys, we solved it. You're done.
We know what works. We know what doesn't work.
Let the punishment fit the crime. We want to hear about what's working for you. You can find us on our Facebook page or our Facebook community by searching for What Fresh Hell Podcast on Facebook.
And you can also find us on Instagram at What Fresh Hell Cast and on Twitter at WFH Podcast.
And Amy was back with her fabulous studies this week. We've had a couple more conversational episodes and Amy has been study deficient, but now you can come to whatfreshhellpodcast.com and read all of Amy's studies, which makes her so happy when you do that, guys.
Yeah, it does.
Amy likes to see those link clicks on the studies.
I do love research, though. I mean, this is just a good job for me.
You worked hard on them, and I want people to appreciate them. And they're going to, I can sense it.
All right, then. Thanks,
don't
everybody.
Don't punish Amy by not reading her studies.
Right,
guys.
Right. Don't withdraw your love. That makes me really feel bad about myself.
That would be horrible. So listen, guys, we understand that we're telling you a lot of stuff that it's like, yeah, easier said than done. But try it. That's the thing. Go forth and try some punishment that fits the crime.
You will too, right? We're going to try the same.
We will too. We'll do it at our house. Perfect. And everyone will be happy. And with that, guys, we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.